This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. We obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
Happ drills one deep left center field. Forget about it. That's gone. Cubs go back to back again. First PCA, now Happ. And it's 6-0 Cubs over the Red Sox.
Gold Glove Award winner.
And a high fly ball hit to deep left. Happ going back. He's at the track near the wall. Leaps. And he makes the catch. Another excellent play in left.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
Should we get PCA out here?
Yeah.
We're going to go get PCA. We'll be right back.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has five fresh pots a day.
Ian Happ on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
We do like talking to Ian Happ, and that's why he joins us every week here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. You heard a little bit of it. Cubs Gold Glover Ian Happ hosts the Compound Podcast. It's now a part of Odyssey Sports. New episodes drop each Wednesday with the latest discussion on the Cubs and baseball. Download and listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, Ian.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. We're happy to have you. I guess we should start there because, as we understand, that Music Box Theater episode of the Compound Podcast did just drop. It was over the All-Star break. I heard the call for PCA. How was the rest of that episode? How'd it go?
It was awesome. It was great to do the live show, and it was nice of Pete to come out and do that. We had a blast. Music Box was a great host and a great venue, and I think people really enjoyed just seeing that live sit down. But we were able to release the audio over the break. A little bit tough for us to get together. Cubs plane got delayed a little bit coming back from New York, so put that one out over the break, and then we just recorded yesterday afternoon, so we got one coming out tomorrow.
Ian, I just quick question. We're so used to hearing Pete Crow Armstrong described as PCA. Does anyone in that clubhouse call him PCA, or does everyone call him Pete?
Mostly Pete.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say mostly Pete, Peter. You might refer to him as PCA when you're talking to somebody else, but to his face, I don't think anybody's saying, hey, PCA.
Peter.
I like the Peter. I think the Peter is the winner right there. It's got a certain element to it, right? Where I can't quite describe it, but I like Peter.
Yeah, that's my go-to. Not actually his name. So I think it counts as a nickname.
I think that works well, especially when you're a young player. You're going to get messed with a little bit in a clubhouse where there are some veterans for sure. Something tells me that was a good move, ribbing him a little bit.
Yeah, it's not bad. I like it. That's been the go-to since kind of day one with him.
And we've watched this team play better baseball in the month of July than in the month of June. You guys were a 500 team in June, 10-6 in the month of July, nothing to cry home about. But here come the Brewers. They've taken over first place. They have the best record in baseball. Does the tenor change at all post-All-Star break as you get closer to the end of the season?
No, I don't think so. I think it's the same team, same attitude. We're just going out there every day focused on kind of our brand of baseball and what we do really well and what series we're playing in. I think the games over the weekend against the Red Sox were a good example of just kind of our brand of baseball, all three facets, and doing it really well. And so that was a lot of fun to come out of the break that way. You know, we dropped that game on Sunday, but I thought it was just really good baseball overall.
The atmosphere, even when we were there, Ian, before the game on Friday, you could tell there was a massive buzz. Crane Kenny said it was one of the most on-demand, if not most demanded, tickets in the history of the Cubs when you consider the secondary market and just how many fans wanted to be there. What was that atmosphere like, especially Friday, you know, the first game back, and here you are facing off with Lucas Giolito on the mound?
Yeah, it was really cool. I think just, you know, it's always a great atmosphere. You know, we had 39,000 last night on a Monday. But that was a lot of buzz. I think just Red Sox Cubs, pretty rare. And to have that coming out of the break with some good weather, and a team that was in first place. Like it just, yeah, it was really cool. And I saw something that, like, if you include the rooftops, it was like 44,000 or 45,000 or something like that. But yeah, seeing that one game, I think it was Friday, it was 41,000 on the board when they did the attendance. It's just standing room only. People are packed in there. It's loud. It's exciting. It's been a great atmosphere all summer. It's really cool.
Joined by Cubs Gold Glover Ian Happ here on Raheem and Harris. If we talk about where the Cubs are as we get ready for the second half, final 62 games of the season. You're 100 games in now. Ian, you put together a modest little hitting streak here, six straight you've gotten a hit in. Is anything changed for you, or is it just a matter of balls finding places to land right now?
Same stuff. I think it's some good at bats, hit some balls hard. I wish more of them were falling. I'm not going to lie. It's been a little bit better. There's been some good swings. A lot of one hits in there. Couple balls, man, hit a ball against Crochet that was knocked down by the wind, and another rocket right at the third baseman. Just keep making those swings. Keep believing that they're going to get down, because hit a few balls over the weekend that could have got out of the park. A couple of them didn't, but just keep with that approach and keep going.
What was it like facing off with Crochet? That was a game I was pointing to, just because tough lefty on the mound, one of the favorites for Cy Young, and thanks to Cade Horton as well, you guys were in it until the later innings. But Crochet in particular, you know, what has made him so tough?
Yeah, he's got the explosive fastball. It's a crossfire. He's really throwing from that first base side. And the fastball is pretty explosive, and then he does a good job with the off-speed pitches of commanding them, being around the zone, and just making them work off each other. I thought we had great at bats. I thought the quality of the bat was really good. We hit balls hard all over the park. Wind didn't do us a ton of favors, and we easily could have put up 3, 4, or 5 runs in that game. But that's what makes him good. What makes him really good is that, similar to Skubal, he goes out there, he throws strikes, doesn't walk guys, and finds a way to get through 6, 7 innings. Similar to Skubal, we walked away saying we had great at-bats. Hit balls really hard. Could have been a different story, but, those guys walk out of there with 6 innings, 1 run. And that's what makes him really good. So makes him Cy Young candidates.
All-Star break is in the rearview mirror, Ian, and now next big hallmark on the calendar is the trade deadline next Thursday, so we're only 9 days away. I'm just curious, as a baseball observer and also as a team that's firmly in a race right now, how do you view the trade deadline, and what are you anticipating, or do you tune in extra, whether it's social media or is there more scuttlebutt in the locker room? How would you describe that?
No, I always think it's interesting. I think it's interesting to see what teams are looking for what. I think there's going to be a pretty competitive market, as there always is, in a few different positions. It feels like a lot of the teams that are competing are looking for, everybody's always looking for pitching, but on the position player side, a couple of specific things. And so it's going to drive up the price of a few guys. I think in the past, since I've been here, Jed has done an awesome job at the deadline. He's always found pieces that we need. And I think we as players have a lot of trust that he's going to go out and do that. It's always an interesting time because it's exciting. Team's going to get better. And we have a really, really good group here already. And I think that we have a lot of beliefs in the group that's in the room right now.
This segment with Ian Happ is brought to you by Finishing Chicago. Great finishes start with contractors from finishingchicago.com. Ian, I feel like you've also been through a scope of ups and downs at the trade deadline. You were on hand to watch that 2021 deadline where you saw the core of the World Series team essentially get traded away in a matter of days. And you've also been on the side the last couple of years where the Cubs were buyers. I think it was really special in 2023 to see how you guys played yourselves into that situation. Had a great month of June leading up to the deadline, a good month of July, and then you're able to be there. How do you look back at the past couple of years where you find out, they want to invest in this team. They're doing things to try to make it better at the big league level. And what kind of boost can it bring?
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate in my career to have only been on the selling side twice, and the buying side a lot. So, yeah, I think that's the cool part about being a Cub. It's you should always be in it. And luckily we have been. We have been a lot to get that boost, play yourself into contention. That's kind of the last 2 years we've kind of been, all right, let's play ourselves into a spot where we could add. And this year, similar to early in my career, it's like we're gonna add. We're in a spot where we're got a really good chance to be in this thing deep into October. And that's, you know, haven't been there since kind of early in my career. And so to be in that spot again, it's awesome. It's the best feeling that Wrigley's going to be rocking all summer and that you're going to be in the thick of it. It doesn't get any better.
Ian, looking at that deadline, and you talked about different teams knowing they need different things, and a lot of the buyers, if you will, as of this moment, need the same kind of positional help. I'm curious as to your thoughts about what's happened at third base. I mean, you go back to Isak Paredes, his acquisition, and now this year the Cubs have been mentioned in pursuit of a lot of different players, including Eugenio Suarez as a possibility. When you look at what Matt Shaw's done just since the All-Star break, is there enough time between now and next week for him to make a case to be the everyday third baseman on a team trying to make a push for the World Series?
I mean, Matt is the everyday third baseman right now. He's been awesome. His defense has been fantastic. You saw it again last night. I know it's not a game that we won, but you know, great play coming home at the bases loaded situation. He's played such a solid defensive third base. And that homer he had early in the game yesterday was huge. Tough pitch to get to. That guy's changeup does not get hit. If you look at the numbers on it, and he did a great job of keeping that thing fair. And his attitude on a daily basis, who he's been, has been so consistent, and doing anything to help the group. And I can't say enough about that, just how he's handled himself. And so, you know, he's our third baseman. He's been awesome. And we have a ton of belief in him.
I also want to ask you about who's on the mound for Kansas City tonight. We got word that Rich Hill was going to be starting. Exactly. Yeah. This is a guy who's 45 years old. There are some old jokes to be made in there somewhere. You know, it reminds me of Jamie Moyer at this point. Rich Hill could just, he cannot be stopped. Like, the truth in my life is that Rich Hill is going to pitch somewhere every year. You know, how do you look at his career just knowing what he's been able to do for so long?
It's awesome. I mean, it's really awesome. You know, faced him as a Dodger, faced him as a Pirate, and trying to think if we faced him anywhere else along the way, but it's super impressive. His love for the game and his desire to be out here and be competing, it's really, really cool. And everybody that I've played with who's played with him has spoke so highly of him as a person, as a teammate. And so it's cool that he's going to be back in the big leagues, and it's cool that we're going to face him. Honestly, I think it's a really awesome to be able to keep going and wanting to do this for that long is really cool.
How long can you see yourself playing baseball? Because, I mean, the first thought that runs to your mind has to be, am I going to be playing baseball at 45? Probably not, right?
I'm not Julio Franco. I don't think the game will let me play until you're 45. If the game lets you play until you're 45, you got a lot of talent and an ability to play this game, because the game will retire you before that as a hitter. I don't think the oldest, I mean, JT's 40. I think that's, I don't think we've seen many hitters post 40. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to play this game for as long as I can, as long as they let me wear the uniform. But yeah, 45 is pretty impressive.
That was my thought on it, Ian, was when you consider the appreciation that guys, I feel like even after the age of 35, have for still being in baseball and still playing. What's some of the, you know, you mentioned Turner, for example. What's some of the impressions you've gotten from guys who are able to play into their 40s?
Yeah, I think this one is the ability to stay healthy, you know, the ability to be available and be healthy. And I think the other part is, once you get over, there's an age gap, there's 35, 36, you know, if you haven't signed a long-term deal, where as a free agent, like, you have to produce to keep getting contracts, and teams aren't handing out longer term deals you know, multiple year deals to guys that are 35, 36, 37, unless you're really producing. So, yeah, I think in JT's case, you look at it, what he's done the last couple of years, whether it was in Boston or Seattle, kind of late in his career, he's produced every year to keep getting deals. And that's what you have to do. And it's just super impressive, you know, at that age to be doing that. And also to have the desire to work, to put in the work in the off season. You know, it's more work than it is when you're young to be able to get your body ready to do this every day. So it's really cool just to see that desire and love for the game, love being around it.
Ian Happ joining us as he does every week here on Raheemy and Harris. And he doesn't just want to play against and with older players. He loves baseball players of all ages. You can join Ian Happ for a day of fundamentals and fun at his Jewel Osco Baseball Pro Camp in partnership with Procter & Gamble. Ian's Baseball Pro Camp open to boys and girls grades 1 through 8 and will be held at Maine West High School in Des Plaines on July 31st. Go to ianhappcamp.com for more info. Ian, you ready for this camp?
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be great. We're actually, I got some, I'm doing some autographs for it this morning that we're going to give to the campers, and just getting excited to see everybody out there. It's going to be a great day, and yeah, we're super fired up for it.
Also, you were in the outfield yesterday. Were you paying attention when you saw one of the fans dive over and into the basket?
No, I didn't see that.
Yes, that happened last night
on a home run, because you know home run balls are meant to go after, and he got a little too overzealous and actually fell into
fully
the basket.
Fully in the basket. That's
fully
why it's
in
there.
The basket.
Yes, yeah, they didn't. You know, they don't show that stuff as much on the broadcast anymore. Like you have to rely on fan videos. But I just wasn't sure if like you were observing the outfield at the time and saw the aftermath there. You're watching like the next batter. But yeah, so that happened. You know, usually where if you're in the outfield, you would have seen it or heard it behind you.
Yeah, I did not pick up on that, but I get the question a lot from guys when they first come over, new coaches. Why is the basket there? That's why it's there, because people used to walk on the wall. People like the bleacher bums used to like run on the wall and they would fall in the field. So they put the basket up. That's my understanding. That's why it's there.
I feel like you're the conduit now between the media and the bleacher regulars because you physically are there. You know, like, do you feel like you have to keep an eye on things? Like, not necessarily disciplinary, but just, you know, you're paying attention.
I'm paying attention. Yeah. I'm locked in on my people out there.
Yeah. That's what I thought. So that's why I figured I'd ask you about it, just because I know you're always aware of the area.
Yeah, I feel bad that I missed that. I'm going to have to go find that video.
It's online. I just don't think you can ask Marquee for it. Yeah. You have to find the fan copy.
Well, I'll get deep in the internet to find that.
Yeah, please report on that and report back for us. Ian Happ, thank you so much. Also, anything we need to know with Connect before we let you go?
No, Connect's great. We're working on the next gold series. So I got some samples I'm going to try, and we're working on the next one for release next month. So we're excited about that.
Awesome, Ian. And in the meantime, please tell Peter Crow Armstrong that we say hello.
That's going to stick. Just let you know, Ian. You started it.
Peter, that's so good. Thanks, Ian. We appreciate the time. That was Ian Happ, of course, our Gold Glove outfielder who makes his weekly appearance every week on The Score. Connect Roasters, you can get the iced coffee, the cold brew right now on sale. Stein Golds as well. Good place to get it before a Cubs game, like maybe you're going tonight. Coming up next, we check in from Hallis Hall. Dan Wiederer is here. He's already telling us who's speaking today, who we can expect to hear from. I'm already excited about the list. Let's get the latest from him next on Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score.
Dan Wiederer, Bears beat reporter and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
You're going to be relying on a lot of young players, guys that have to materialize into who they thought they were.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
We'll mention this mainly because Chicago Tribune writer Dan Wiederer said we would mention this nugget.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer.
Thanks, Coach. We'll go first to Dan Wiederer.
On 670 The Score.
You know that music. That's Dan Wiederer's music. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. He is the host of the Take the North podcast with one Mark Rote. He's the Bears reporter for the Tribune And he is part of our Bears training camp coverage, which on the Score is presented by Chevy Drive Chicago and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Dan, I already see you've got the list of who's talking at Halas Hall. Tell us what's happening today.
Yeah, and it looks like we, based on the setup in the PNC Center, that it will be one at a time, which is always a good thing for reporters to get the productive back and forth. And I think it will start with Ryan Poles, transition to Ben Johnson, and then we get Caleb Williams and Grady Jarrett as the offensive and defensive spokespeople. Should be a fun day here as we get this thing off the ground.
Dan, I'm super curious. What's your first question to Ryan Poles?
Well, there's a few things that I'm curious to get at with him. Number one, he talked a lot since January about resetting and establishing a very sturdy foundation for Caleb going into year two. I want to know some more specifics about what that is. Additionally, I'm curious how he is going to approach this camp differently. We all know that he saw, through his own words, some warning signs of things that weren't going the way he wanted them to go last summer. And I'm just curious how he will change his approach if those types of things pop up on his radar this year and he decides to step in and point them out a little bit more readily. And I'll be interested to hear from him on that front.
That was a big part of it to me, not just after we heard that he had an extension, but also because isn't that part of your job? Isn't it part of your job to step in and oversee and say, if this isn't going the way you want, and mm-hmm. you know that that was the result, how are you going to change it this time? What is your job here?
I think management and leadership is very difficult on that front at times. And you sometimes believe in the people that you've empowered to have roles, and you think that they're just going to be able to steer it back on course and be able to get things corrected. And sometimes maybe you give a little bit too much faith and trust in the people that you have in those positions. And I think that was probably a little bit of what happened last year. But look, like they have made no bones about it. They expect to be a good football team this year. They expect to win and win now. Those were the words of the head coach when he took the job in January. And so I think that urgency needs to be present every single day we're out here, starting today with whatever they do in meetings. And then obviously we get on the practice field for the first time in a kind of ramp up session tomorrow morning. They've got to have that sense of we got to go and we got to go now.
What's beautiful about this time of year, as we are joined by Dan Wiederer to talk about the opening of training camp for the Bears, the beat writer for the Chicago Tribune, is that you have so many different storylines to choose from when you talk about players, whether it's new players, old players, players coming back, players who are mysteriously on a list of non-football injuries. Where do you start here, and what is the most intriguing of those issues for you?
In terms of the guys that we're not sure about
yeah.
right now? Well, obviously, Jalen, I want clarity there as quickly as someone can provide it on what's going on there and how long he may potentially be out from the mix here. I think Braxton Jones's status is obviously one we're going to be keeping close watch on. If he starts the camp on PUP, how quickly can he get off? If he's not on PUP, how quickly can he practice at full strength? We all know how important it is to identify who you want to be your starter at left tackle going into the regular season as soon as possible. That's going to be under the radar for sure. And then obviously with some of the new guys, you're just, I think Colson Loveland's a guy that you have to have eyes on because we didn't get to see him do anything during the spring. And this is a top 10 pick, and top 10 picks are supposed to be immediate difference makers for your program. And so you want to feel like there's a program set up to get Colson ready to make an impact when they play their first regular season game on a Monday night in September, which it feels like it's a long way off, but it sure is not when you start counting it down.
Given how much we've heard, Dan, about Keeks Keenum, do we think that it's worth asking a question when it comes to why he was initially on that NFI list, but now he's not?
I think we can get to that. I don't know if that's a today question, just because I think there's some bigger front burner issues to kind of work through. The fact that he's off is, I think, a good sign. And then as this week goes on, we'll get a little bit more clarity on some of those things. But that's another one where you do know that the Bears are challenging Tyson Bagent to win the QB2 job, and Case Keenum is there to do that. As much as he's been brought in to be a guide and a compass for Caleb Williams, he's here to compete too. And so his status out here in the practice sessions and how they divvy up those second team reps is going to be interesting as well.
Dan, when you're looking at the quarterback, the starting quarterback, Caleb Williams, mm-hmm. could there be any more pressure on this young man? I mean, number one overall pick. We saw what happened his rookie season with a what I'll call an inept coaching staff. But it seems like Ben Johnson being in place means that if something does not happen, develop, goes wrong, it's going to be all eyes on Caleb Williams as far as that offense is concerned.
Yeah, and I think how they would frame it here within the building is that there's opportunity here. And any pressure that you feel is a byproduct of the opportunity that you have to do something that hasn't been done here, which is to be a legitimate franchise quarterback that takes this team on a sustained run of success. And when you've heard Ben and Caleb sort of talk about their collective opportunity here to change the history, I think that excites you, right? And it steers you away from feeling kind of the weight of expectation that's on you. But that weight of expectation is certainly here. And you guys know how the micro analysis of this football team will go over the next 6.5 weeks of practice. There will be days where there will be viral highlights where people will be proclaiming that his arrival is here and it is permanent. And then there will be days where it's really sloppy and the defense is winning and the defense is telling the offense how much they're winning. And it's going to be like, oh God, can Chicago handle another one of these roller coaster rides? And so I think Caleb has got to be very, very present. Just where he is each day and understanding that he's going to be pushed by a coaching staff that's trying to get the most out of him with goals that he has vocalized for himself to be the guy that brings a Super Bowl championship back to this building. And so I think you just got to kind of take it day by day and then get into the regular season and see where you're at once you start playing those games.
This segment with Bears Tribune beat writer Dan Wiederer is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I feel like in years past, we may have had more questions about bigger name players aside from like the one being Jalen Johnson when it comes to the NFI list. I know there's three total, but when you consider how the Bears are coming in here, knowing that, yes, we got to figure out what's going on with Colson Loveland's shoulder. We do have to figure out what's going on with Luther Burden's soft tissue injury. Yep. But but other than that, how do you feel like the Bears have at least set themselves up for this training camp compared to last season and the one before?
Well, look, like you've got to navigate the early stages of camp. I remember being asked a question about 6 to 8 days into camp last year about how good of a sign it was that Nate Davis had been at every practice to that point. That looked like there's a long, long road to go before you start to feel good about things like that, you know. And so, you know, whatever good feelings you're having on day one when you walk into the building, they have to be pretty good as well when you walk in here 2 weeks from now and the grind of camp starts to escalate and some of those injuries start to pop up. You've got to be able to navigate that. And I think, you know, look, this is Ben's first time as a head coach at any level. He's going to have to figure out how to navigate that, when to put his foot on the gas, when to hit the brake pedal a little bit, when to, you know, kind of read the team and through his leaders get communication on what they need and what they don't need at certain times during camp. And so that's going to be a new challenge for a guy that has a lot of credentials as an offensive play caller, but now is kind of doing this head coaching thing for the first time and will be kind of learning on the fly in that regard.
I remember the Matt Nagy press conference where he talked about how players tested him and he had to bring out the dark side. And this was the good times. This was the 2018 season when he was in his first year as head coach with the Bears. Do you remember that?
The dark side stuff that he brought up was coming out of London in 2019. That was when that season was kind of, you know, kind of wiggling on that tightrope up there. And I think he understood that, oh, man, we are at a place that we didn't foresee ourselves being. And so what I remember from Matt's first camp is it was all rainbows and you know, sunshine, because this guy came in with the energy that he had. He won his team over during that camp with the energy he had. They got Khalil Mack on Labor Day weekend and got more energy. And then that season was – it was the anomaly for me during my time on the beat where literally there was not a lot that went wrong for that team that year. And so that one's different. 2018 is different. And you're hopeful that the Bears can find a road back to those types of days sometime soon. And maybe Ben brings a similar energy in year one here that gets that thing started in the right way.
And you're right. Yeah, I remember it was 2019 now. I did not go to London, so I didn't have that marker. But yeah. I do remember him talking about that and going, I bet that happens, obviously, with not just him. So at some point, I wonder how somebody's going to try to test Ben Johnson and if that kind of discussion ends up taking place at some point.
Well, and look, like the biggest thing I've learned about Ben since January is how competitively intense he is. And it's present at all times. And everyone that you've talked to that's spent any time around him, either in this building or previously, tells you the same thing, that edge is very real and it's very sharp. And now you have to figure out how to make that work with the group you're with now. And I think to this point, he's done a good job of it. Training camp's a different beast than OTAs and mini camp. You know, there's a lot of things that happen in a camp where fatigue sets in, where emotions get high. You're going to bring in two opponents here in a few weeks to do some joint practices. So, you know, that edge is going to be fun to watch. I think we're in for entertainment. Wherever this season goes, I think it's going to be a very fascinating and entertaining season to chronicle. And so I'm geared up today. There's a little bit of juice in the air for sure.
Okay, Dan, I'm going to bring you down maybe a little bit, or maybe not. Dan Weeder.
Don't do it, Marshall. Don't do it.
No, Bears beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. Since you're already kind of have that vibe going, do me a favor. Help keep me from having that banana in the tailpipe energy that I'm trying to avoid having heading into a camp, understanding everyone's going to be saying all the right things on day one.
Oh, yeah.
Give me reasons to be positive that are not overly optimistic.
So this is, I had a conversation with Jeff Wyrus from Fox 32 on the walk-in from the parking lot this morning about just like, I think there's a lesson in last season, right? There's a lesson in the camp. There's a lesson in the Hard Knocks hype. There's a lesson in feeling the way we felt about this team at 4-2, you know, and going into their bye week and being like, well, there's some legitimate stuff here. And the lesson for me is to just take a deep breath every day and filter out what feels meaningful from what feels like August hype. You know, and I think that's going to take a really thorough process every day to do that, especially in this era where every practice is covered like it's the Super Bowl now, right? Like this isn't 20 years ago where you could keep things in the proper context and in the proper frame for the masses. And now you just got to go each day and try to see signs of legitimate progress. And that's one of the questions I have at the top of my list for Ben today is what for you in a camp like this qualifies as legitimate progress? What are the signs for you that you need to see as we get towards, you know, the regular season that tell you that you've got this thing going in the right direction. And so it's a long-winded answer, Marshall, to a question that I think is let's just talk week by week and we'll filter through it together.
I like that attitude. I can appreciate that, but I'm just telling you, I'm not trying to be cynical. I'm just trying to be pragmatic in my approach.
And
with
you
the
should
Bears
be. And they've earned that, right? And that, like that's the thing, and that's why there's no reason that the hype train should leave the station during the summer. It just shouldn't, because we've seen that train go off the tracks and careen into to the deep waters beneath it many times here. And so I think you just have to be ready to kind of go on the ride with this team and understand, look, I've said for a while, this schedule is very difficult. You know, for me, a legitimate bullseye for this team is to be, you know, around 500 into December and then see if you can get hot at the right time, keep yourself in playoff contention until the last snap of the season is taken and see where you land at the end. And if you do that with obvious signs of direction for the quarterback, you should feel pretty good, even though the patience level in this town is longing for something much greater than, you know, say eight and nine, whatever it may be at that time of year.
The Nate Davis symbol was really all you needed.
Yeah,
to do.
That was a great story.
That's one that we should not and will not forget. Dan Weederer, have a great first day of Bears training camp. Thanks for joining us here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score.
Thanks, Dan.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon, guys.
That was Dan Weederer, the Bears beat reporter. He hosts the Take the North podcast, which you can get right here on the Odyssey app. Coming up next, it is halftime and a notable death in the acting community that I think really affected a lot of people's lives yesterday in Malcolm Jamal Warner's passing. I feel like he was everyone's brother, and we should pay our respects next. You're listening to Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score, thanks to the Odyssey and the iHeartRadio apps.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What time is it?
It's halftime.
That it is, and this is not just any old halftime. It's a halftime of the first day of everybody in the house at Hallis Hall reporting to training camp 2025. How do you like that? We also talked about the Cubs and how the Brewers are not only breathing down their necks, they've taken control of first place in the NL Central for the first time. Another team other than the Cubs has had it since April 3rd, earlier this year. We talked to Ian Happ about that and more. Dan Weederer joined us for a check-in from Hallis Hall, which is always nice. And now we are at a halftime where, unfortunately, yesterday we got the news of a very, very sad passing. Malcolm Jamal Warner, who many knew on The Cosby Show for playing Theo, reportedly drowning off the coast of a beach near Limon in Costa Rica. He was only 54 years old. And I feel like to a generation, he was the brother to a generation who watched The Cosby Show and grew up in that same era and held a special place in a lot of people's hearts because of it.
And we say of a generation, really a generational show in The Cosby Show, 8 seasons, and he got an Emmy nomination for his role as Theo Huxtable, the middle child in that, the only son of the Huxtables, and kind of a crazy world in which back then, before cable really took over, it was appointment viewing on a Thursday night. It was The Cosby Show, it was Cheers. A Different World came in as a spinoff of The Cosby Show. And really, it's the joy that watching that show and him playing that character and really what he went on to do even after he played that role that hit a lot of people, because let's be clear, Malcolm Jamal Warner was not old. Only 54 years old at the time of his tragic death, drowning off the coast of Costa Rica, as you said. But it's more of a, man, that was like not that long ago that this guy was entertaining us as an actor on a very popular show. And the stuff that he did, even, you know, after he had his own show with Eddie Griffin, Malcolm and Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy that really has been at the forefront of that world without being like too Hollywood, I guess. He comes off as completely relatable even when he's not on television. And that's something that was rare back then is even rarer now. He had like a kind of a post-acting career.
And he was also on the show Fame, you know, and that was such a popular show in the early 80s. So he was somebody who a lot of people feel like they grew up watching and a real peer. And anytime something like this happens, not only are you sad for the loss of a real talent and light in the acting community, but also somebody that you feel like you grew up with. It lets you know how old you are in a way. And it's just awful that it was a drowning. You know, we talk all the time about water safety and just how serious it is. And unfortunately, another life claimed where we've had too many bad news related to water hazards recently, when I think about the flooding in Texas, for example. But then also, of course, you remember what they did and who they were when you remember them just being a part of your life. And that's when a lot of people started to share that their favorite scenes from The Cosby Show. And separate from Bill Cosby, you can appreciate who Malcolm Jamal Warner was at such a young age, being able to act on one of the most popular shows of a decade. A lot of people say The Cosby Show saved the sitcom, because at the time, it was a concept that helped reinvent and keep that genre relevant. I remember you and I were talking about this, Marshall, how every new season, you know, here we are talking about the new football season for the Bears. And I remember getting excited every fall to see the new Cosby Show open and how they were going to film it and what the concept was going to be.
What's great is Theo made an impact because it was season 1, episode 1, where a teenage Theo Huxtable is trying to have a discussion with his dad about economics and how it worked and how he's going to be okay no matter what kind of grades he made.
Suppose you graduate from high school. Let's say you just slide by. All right, now you got to find a job. Now, what kind of salary do you expect for a regular person?
$250 a week.
$250 a week?
Yeah.
Sit down. I'm going to give you $300 a week. Yes, indeed. $300 a week, $1,200 a month. All right?
Great, I'll take you.
Yes, you will. And I will take $350 for taxes.
Whoa!
Huh? Yeah, now, because see, the government comes for the regular people first. Now, how much does that leave you with?
$850.
All right. Now, you've got to have an apartment because you are not going to live here. So, an apartment in Manhattan will run you at least $400 a month.
I'll live in New Jersey.
All right. You live in New Jersey, you've got to have a car.
I ride a motorbike.
You need a helmet.
Figure $100 a month for clothes and shoes.
Figure $200. I want to look good.
Okay, so what does that leave you with?
$200. So no problem.
There is a problem. You haven't eaten yet.
I can get by on bologna and cereal. So I got everything I need plus $200 left for the month.
You plan to have a girlfriend?
For sure.
And that was Dr. Huxtable taking away the last of his cash because, yeah, to have a girlfriend, that can be expensive.
That Manhattan rent, huh? $400 a month? Interesting. I need to look into that.
Times were different. Times were very different back in 1984. That's how old that show is. 41 years ago, the Cosby Show debuted.
Incredible. It's a sad thing. He brought a lot of joy to a lot of people watching that show. Cosby Show, as you mentioned, ran until 1992, and that's how formative it was for that time. And he was very much a huge part of that.
And Malcolm Jamal Warner, besides acting, he had a huge love for music as well. He told Questlove that he picked up playing the bass just as a hobby. And he would later go on to win a Grammy for a musical performance as well. I mean, certainly a shorter life than he would have liked, but he had a full life, Malcolm Jamal Warner. And I'm glad that he and his presence was able really to just enrich everybody else's lives with what he was able to do.
The brother to a generation.
Theo.
We will miss him. Coming up next here on Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score, it's time for 5 on It. We have some pressing baseball questions, a pressing football question as we get ready to hear from the main players at Hallis Hall, the front office at 12:30. In the meantime, we also have a basketball question that will plague Marshall Harris for months.
Stop.
So let's listen next on Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score.